Hi, I'm Dr. Chris Crowley, here today for another episode of Beauty and the Brain. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. We are the podcast where we talk about all things aesthetics. We have a couple of interesting topics to talk about today, and they're actually two of the things that are the most difficult, challenging things that we deal with in the clinic. One of them is cellulite, and the other is melasma. I'm joined today by my co-host and husband.
I'm Jerry Drinkard, family nurse practitioner, and together Chris and I own Skin and Tonic, our medical spa in Pace, Florida. And we see these things a lot. They're probably two of our most commonly requested treatments and probably two of the most difficult to treat as well, don't you think?
I agree. Like these, they could not be more diverse in terms of like problems, but they're also like very stubborn and challenging problems. But fortunately, we have some great solutions, and we do have ways that we can help patients with this. I think this is a great opportunity for us to share some of those things, but also talk about the challenges that we face and that patients struggle with when they're trying to get these problems under control. And just a shout out before we jump into it. So, you know, we always love to our listeners and our viewers on YouTube to give us suggestions on topics that they want to hear about. And so, Regina, this is for you. So I know that we had a special request to do an episode on cellulite. And this is from one of our clients that we really enjoy every time that we get to see her. She's just a joy to be around. This is her suggestion. So,
but I also think that the question couldn't come from a better person, because this lady, she eats right, she's healthy, she's super fit, she exercises 3 to 4 days a week. And when I say exercise, she attends classes, she teaches classes, she does Zumba. She's like everything that we all want to be when it comes to our physical exercise. And she still battles cellulite.
Yeah, so cellulite, I think that's one of the interesting things about it. It doesn't have to be from obesity or from people being overweight. And I think that's what they think, but it really, you can be very in shape and thin. And there's a lot of things that go into contributing to cellulite. You want to talk about some of those things? And
yeah, I think it's a very common misconception that cellulite is related to obesity or being overweight or being out of shape. But one of the most common probably is heredity is one, certainly. Hormones is probably right up there with heredity. And those are things that are really, really tough to battle.
Yeah, sure, because we see this. Some men can have this as well, but it's much less likely in men than it is in women. We see this much more commonly with our female patients. You know, we live here in Florida in a coastal area, and so large portions of the year it's warm and people are in shorts and swimsuits and enjoying some of the benefits that we have to live in an ideal climate. But because of that, we also have a lot of things that we see in an aesthetic practice where people are wanting to hide some of these imperfections. So we see it any parts of the body really, but it's most commonly seen in the lower extremities. So, butt, thighs, hips, those areas we really see people struggle. And really it's a problem where we kind of have this dimpling of the skin. It kind of looks almost like an orange peel like skin. So it's a little bit rough texture. It's not a smooth texture. And when we have patients that come in, they're trying a lot of different things like these home remedies where they're doing rollers and exercising and trying to lose weight, and they just can't seem to get rid of that texture.
Yeah, I think rollers and fascia blasters like are really common things that we see that are tried, and they're different, they're varying degrees in cellulite, but we're all our own worst critics. And so I think it's something that I had a really young patient in the clinic last week actually that came in, or she was one of Allie's patients that came in for a consultation regarding cellulite, and she said that she hadn't worn shorts in 5 years. And you know, she lives in Florida. I mean, man, how do you get by with not wearing shorts? But she was literally so embarrassed about it, and it was minimal. You know, when we took a look, I was really expecting a lot more, but to her, you can't minimize that. So people they're searching for different things to do. And we thought at one point we had a solution that came out on the market 2 years.
Yeah, so there was a product, and some of you guys may have heard about it. We definitely treated patients with this. product. It was called Quo, and it was a product that would break down collagen fibers, which is one of the causes, the underlying causes of cellulite, these collagen fibers that kind of like tether the skin down. And, you know, that's why, regardless of weight, it's that tethering down that's going to cause this dimpling. And so this was an injectable product that it was called Quo, and you could inject it and it would dissolve those collagen fibers. It was removed from the U.S. market, so we no longer have access to this product. You know, we had okay results with it. It wasn't the results that was a problem. There were kind of a lot of, it was troublesome to go through the treatment. Significant bruising was like the biggest side effect, and it really didn't matter about your injection technique or, you know, what you were doing. There was a fair amount of bruising, and so it was also hard to get, and it was a series of treatments. So to get somebody to commit to doing a series of treatments where they were going to be significantly bruised for a period of time afterwards was kind of challenging. So, you know, we don't offer that anymore, but it's because it's been pulled off the market in the U.S.
Yeah, we still have some other options and some certainly some things that we can do to minimize it. I think probably going from the least invasive to the a little more invasive, we have our Zimmer device, our Z-Wave. And that's a sound wave device that can be used. Again, it takes some dedication on the patient's part because there does require a number of sessions. The correction depends on the severity of the cellulite we're treating and the patient's response. Every patient responds to every treatment differently. So the sound waves can go in, but the reality is you're not going to get 100% correction with a lot of these unless you do something to break up the bands that are tethering the skin down.
Yeah, and so the Z-Wave, I mean, it's actually an approved technology for this. And so people, it's not something, we use it in a lot of other areas in an off-label fashion, but this is actually approved for cellulite. And so we see pretty good results with it. To me, the main downside is it takes frequent treatments close together and a high number of them. So usually we're needing around a minimum of 8 to 10 sessions, and that's usually 2 of those per week. So you got about a month or 6 weeks that you're needing to come into the practice twice per week.
That's a lot of dedication and time devoted by the patient. And then, you know, we have some other treatments that work really well. Some of the injectables, a hyperdiluted calcium product that we use, is one of the more popular, common that we're doing. And when we do these treatments, we use a larger gauge cannula to do it. So we actually go in and break some of the tethered the bands apart before injecting some of the product. And do you want to elaborate a little on how it works and why it works?
I mean, I actually love this product, and it's one of the things that I liked for cellulite treatment before we even tried some of the other injectables like Quo. So it would still be my preferred product and probably what I would go to. Either that, and you guys know I love Sculptra and I use Sculptra a lot, so it's another biostimulator that we could use to treat this area. You mentioned the calcium hydroxyl apatite product, and we use it in a diluted fashion. So in the U.S. it's marketed under Radius, and so a lot of people think about that as a filler. And while we can use it as a filler to fill in some of the dimpling, we don't use it in that fashion in our practice. The way we prefer to use it for cellulite specifically is to go in with a cannula. And so for those of you that are listening that may not know what a cannula is, and it looks kind of like a needle, but the end of it is blunt. It's not something that's sharp, so it's not going to really cause as much vessel damage if we get near a blood vessel. We have a, you know, a little bit lower chance of bruising with that. So we use this cannula to go in there and kind of mechanically break up some of those fibers that may tether that skin down. And then as we do that, we put this really diluted calcium hydroxyl apatite. So we take the filler and we dilute it down with saline or lidocaine or both, and then we spread it out really thin in that area, and it provides some smoothing. And so it helps kind of fill in those areas. And really, when we look out 6 or 8 weeks later, we get a very nice result with that product.
Yeah, I was gonna say you get some immediate resolution or improvement just from the correction of the tethering, but the true benefit is a little further out because you do get the development of collagen in those areas and as it heals, and we always recommend that they come back in for a follow-up treatment. I think certainly with this procedure, you're gonna be beneficial to have 3 treatments depending on the severity, but you can certainly see some improvement after one. And so most most people that we see at the clinic, they like this as an option because they do see kind of an end in sight, and they can see some immediate resolution. And we can target the areas that are their primary concerns. And that's important to people because what's my concern and your concern versus their concern is oftentimes very different.
So what are your thoughts? I mean, if we're putting a product in to stimulate collagen development, that seems really counterintuitive and opposite of using the on-label product that was here in the US Quo, which breaks down collagen. So how do we really, you know, kind of reconcile that in our minds or with our patients that we're putting something in to develop collagen when in fact some of this underlying problem could be from these collagen fibers that are tethering it down?
Well, I think part of that is that we mechanically break down the fibers that's causing the tethering, and that's what Quo did for us, and hence the bruising that was followed by the injection. So I feel that the mechanical mechanism that we use with the Radius injections versus the way that we did Quo, I think that's where the difference comes with the collagen stimulation, if you want to say. And then the stimulation for the dimpling is certainly like to rebuild the tissue in that area.
Certainly, this is not an FDA on-label use of this product. This is something that we're using in an off-label fashion, you know, to kind of help with these results. And anecdotally, we've seen good results in our practice. To me, I don't have, you know, a study supporting this. It's just my opinion. But to me, it's exactly what you said. We're mechanically breaking up the fibers. But by putting down this thin layer of product, we're stimulating more uniform, more even collagen development. So rather than having these discrete fibers that are holding down really specific areas, now we have a more even collagen development to kind of smooth out that area. And so when I'm using it, that's what I'm thinking in my mind. That's what I'm visualizing as I'm trying to smooth out this area that may be like really dimpled. Let's talk a little bit about this same kind of concept, because it really is a similar injection technique and injection pattern, but with the use of a product called Sculptra.
Right. So for this particular treatment, you know, I love Sculptra as much as anyone, but for this particular treatment, I do prefer Radius. And the reason is I feel that the patients are a little more satisfied with it because there is a gel component to Radius. And so they see an immediate correction versus Sculptra that they may see a correction the day of just from strictly the volume of the sterile water that's in there, but they're not going to see a long-term not going to see it over the next couple of weeks.
And do you think you see that even with the diluted Radius?
Yeah, I do. And our dilutions depend on the areas we're treating. So there's diluted Radius and there's hyper-diluted Radius and there's Radius that can be used in the pure form. So me personally, the only time I use pure form Radius is if I'm on the bone. And we use diluted Radius in an area that's deeper, and I use a hyper-diluted Radius as I get closer to the surface of the skin. So for people that don't understand when we're talking about diluted versus hyper-diluted versus like as it comes from a syringe.
Yeah, so I mean, I agree with everything you said. I actually kind of like Sculptra still, even though they don't get the immediate results, I like the skin glow that they get with Sculptra over. So I feel that when we compare the two, they're both biostimulants, they both have their place. And do a great job with the Sculptra. That's a polyol-lactic acid molecule that's gonna dissolve. So it's a dissolvable suture for people who haven't heard of that before. And as our bodies breaks that material down, it builds collagen in its place. And so it's a little bit longer lasting. And the areas that it's approved for on-label indication, we know that people are happy with it up to 2 years. And so when we use it and, you know, kind of off-label in other parts of the body, we still get really good results with it. And in those areas, you know, we can see the results a bit longer. And personally, I think it gives a little bit more of a glow to the skin. So if that's something that's important to people, I think that would be why I would choose that product and one of the reasons I like it so much.
So if you want your butt to glow, use Sculptra. If you want your butt to be smooth, use Radius.
Exactly. Or mix them, you know, use, let's do one cheek with one and one with the other. And then
maybe we can do that.
Yeah, that'll be.
We should do that.
We should do that if we can get somebody to let us try it. So, yeah. Maybe one of our family or friends that's listening to this will come down and let us do one butt cheek with Radius
call,
and the other.
Call me Regina.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about other therapy. So those are things that we offer in our office that are actually pretty effective. We have great results with that. But there are things out there that other providers may have, and we actually have some great providers in our area that are providing other treatments. So there are some laser devices or light-based devices out there that can treat this problem. And if you're going to seek those treatments out, I would encourage you to just talk to the provider about their results, their experience, if they're using something that's either approved on-label or off-label.
There's some things out there about radiofrequency microneedling improving this as well, and even microneedling without the radiofrequency. So I think all of us as injectors, and like you said, there's a lot of really good people in our area, a lot of really cool devices between all of us in the areas. And so there's certainly some options out there, but this is one of the most difficult things that we see in clinic to treat.
Yeah, one of the, you know, again, one of the other providers in the area, they have one, it's called, I think, an Avelli device. I don't know if I'm saying that right or not, but it looks, you know, they go in and they break the fibers up with like a light device. Somehow they go in there and break it apart, and it looks like, you know, they've had some pretty good results with that. There's also other things that people are using where they're using like carboxy therapy, where they're infusing like through PDO threads, they're putting in this carboxy therapy. And there are some trademark procedures out there that have been developed by some really well-known physicians. So I know Dr. Halim developed that for a cellulite treatment that she's trademarked, and it uses a carboxy therapy with a PDO thread. So there are definitely things out there on the market that other than what we offer in our practice. And so.
Yeah, I didn't think to mention about PDO thread use with the treatment of cellulite. We do offer it at the clinic. It's minimal downtime as well. We don't use the carboxy therapy at our clinic, but we do use the threads. It's minimal downtime, like I said. Comes with the risk of bruising, and the results are...
Yeah, I definitely like combining that. So, but threads are a great combination.
It's a great combination therapy for a lot of things. I mean, it's one of the best collagen stimulators that we have on the market.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's kind of jump topics here, switch to our second most common, or not most common, but our second most difficult problem to treat that we see, which is melasma.
It's pretty common as well, though. I think... because of our patient population, the patient age that we treat, and the area that we live in. And so melasma is really not an easy thing to treat. It's, for those of you that don't know, melasma is a hyperpigmented area that is darker than the surrounding skin. There are several causes of melasma, and you want to kind of elaborate on that a little?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, there's a lot of things, and I think that's one of the aggravating things about it. So melasma can occur in different you know, parts of the skin. We can have a more superficial or a deeper melasma, and that makes each of them a little bit different treatment plan and more challenging. So hormones we know are a factor, sun exposure can be a factor, heredity can be a factor. There are certain autoimmune conditions that can cause this abnormal pigmentation. So it's multifactorial, and I don't think anybody can tell you the you know, exact underlying cause, but we definitely know that hormones and sun exposure are probably some of the top two things that we see.
And it's really commonly seen after pregnancy. We see it after pregnancy, and then a lot of times it'll kind of rear its ugly face again around menopause, even if it's kind of been controlled prior to that. And we use some topical treatments that certainly help it. We're very fortunate at our clinic that we have an Aralase Neo, which is probably, in my opinion, one of the best things on the market that I've seen especially personally seen that kind of keeps this under control or reverses some of the effects of melasma.
Yeah, so one of the great things with that particular device, so for those of you who don't know what that is, an Aralase Neo, it's a laser device. And a lot of the laser devices that are used to treat some of these pigmented conditions generate heat. And heat can certainly aggravate or worsen melasma, especially if that heat is delivered too superficially or if it stays in the skin too long. So one of the great things about the Aralase Neo device is it's a microsecond technology. technology. So it delivers the energy into the area that we need it. So into that pigment to help kind of like diminish it or bust it up. And it's such a short time in the skin, it doesn't really heat the tissue around it. And so we have really minimal chance of worsening that. So it is a device that's approved on all skin types. And you know, I agree with you that it's a, we've had very good results with using this device to treat melasma in our practice.
I think the one of the main things with treating melasma is consistency, not overheating the skin, and minimize sun exposure. You know, we talk about sunscreen and wearing hats and that sort of thing, but the sun exposure is key in this. We have a really big population of Peruvian patients, and for whatever reason, they really tend to battle this. And you know, it's been treated with several things fairly successfully, but I think the use of hydroquinone on these patients has been very effective in combination with the use of the device we're talking about.
Yeah, so we don't typically like to keep people on the hydroquinone for long periods of time. It can actually, you know, cause some rebound or worsening, but it's great to do as a pretreatment or for short-term use. We do it a lot in our patients in the kind of the winter months of the year. And then we have other products either in our ZO line that we carry, but they're non-hydroquinone-based topical agents that we can use in conjunction with the devices. You know, I know, Jerry, you've treated some patients with really resistant melasma and did some microneedling with different a different sort of topical than we would normally use. Do you want to talk a bit about that?
Yeah, most of those patients, we do a series of chemical pills. One of my favorite chemical pills for treating melasma is the VI pill. And we do recommend a series of three. It does have a hydroquinone component of it, but it is a combination pill. And so we've treated them with a combination pill of sorts, do three of those treatments. And in between treatments, even we've done some microneedling. And so the I don't think that there's a one-hit wonder with treatment of melasma.
Yeah, I know we've had a few that responded really well when we combine a tranexamic acid in with our microneedling solution. So it's not something that we normally put in there, but we've had pretty good results with that. So it's something that's available out there that you can talk to your provider about.
We have, and some recommendations are out there even that it can be injected. And so in patients that have had really resistant areas, we have done some of the injection of the tranexamic acid. You have to be careful, just like with any other treatments.
So I'm going to go through just some, I have a list of questions here that are common misconceptions, and I'm just going to ask you the misconceptions and get your response on that and see what you can tell the people out there that are sending these in.
Okay.
All right. Is melasma caused by poor hygiene?
No.
So you can't take a bath twice a day and wash it off?
It's not caused by poor hygiene, and if you're nasty, you're not necessarily get melasma. But yeah, hygiene does not have anything to do with hyperpigmentation of the skin.
Is melasma contagious?
No.
Can only women get melasma?
Absolutely not. Although it is more common in women just because of hormonal impacts. Unfortunately, women do have more fluctuations in hormones. And like I said, probably one of the most common times that women get melasma is around pregnancy.
Is melasma permanent?
Hopefully not. Melasma is a permanent battle, I'll say that. I think the battle is ongoing. And I think that once you have melasma, you do have a predisposition to continue to have that battle.
Yeah, I always tell patients, and I know you do as well, that this is a chronic condition, that we can improve it, that we can kind of help minimize it, but it's certainly something that they're going to battle. And, you know, the best thing that they can do is really be aggressive with sunscreen. We have people that we've got great control and they decide to go for, you know, 4th of July weekend at the beach, and then we battle it again for months after to try to get it back under control. So we really encourage, you know, sunscreen daily and frequently reapplied if they don't want to have to battle this. With that being said, the next question was, can sunscreen alone prevent melasma?
No, I don't think that it prevents melasma, because I don't think that sun exposure alone causes melasma. I think it's a compounded effect that causes this hyperpigmentation. So to answer in one word, no, I don't think it can prevent it. But I think that it is probably one of the key things. It is one of the key things in like prevention of worsening of the condition.
And the last one I had here was, will melasma disappear on its own?
Unfortunately, most of the time not.
Okay. So, I mean, I think we've kind of covered the grounds of what we have to offer at the clinic, but you know, the take home message that I want to share with all of our listeners out there, patients and providers alike, is that this is a multifactorial problem. It is a chronic condition. Talk to your provider, see what treatment options that they have available, because you know, you may be in an area that has something different than what we have here, but you really want to be aware of what they're treating you with, because some of the things that generate a lot of heat can give you a short-term improvement, but can actually make the melasma worse over the next few months.
And unfortunately, we have seen that.
Yeah, we've seen that. And so some of the, you know, I'm not saying every device is the same, and it's a lot of it may be dependent on the user and the settings, but where we've seen that is a lot of people getting IPL treatments. And so they'll get an IPL or light-based device that generates a lot of heat, and they may get some short-term improvement with their melasma, but then we've ended up seeing those patients over time where we've had to try to deal with a worsening condition they had before they got the treatment. All right. So I hope you guys have learned a lot from this episode today. We look forward to seeing you again next week. Please keep sending in your questions or your topics that you would like us to talk about, because these show topics are generated directly from our patients. So thanks again for tuning in, and we look forward to seeing you on another episode of Beauty in the Brain next week.
See you soon.